Hey, Chicago. What do you say? Cubs gonna win today.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise podcast. It's time for the Cubs podcast with Praz and Oleg. Guys, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Well, Andy.
Terrific.
Actually got to see Oleg on Monday night over at the Cubs game.
Yep.
It's always nice when you two can get together.
That's right.
Bond.
Yeah.
Hug it out.
Got shirts on.
Yeah, hopefully. I don't expect that either one of you is going to go see The Fall Guy. You know, it's a movie. It used to be a TV show.
Yeah. No,
now it's a movie.
I didn't know that they made a movie out of it.
They did, and it's pretty good. I enjoyed it. I alluded to this in a tweet. The very first music you hear is the intro to the music from from our old Bears podcast. And you hear the intro, and I felt compelled to yell out at the end, "Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise podcast."
It's "I Was Made for Loving You" by Kiss, right?
Yes, by Kiss.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember the old Norm Macdonald joke. The good news is Kiss is getting back together, and the bad news is they're still going to suck.
Not too bad.
But it was there, and it was the very beginning of the movie. I was very excited about that.
That is exciting.
Anyway.
Can we start with this with a prayer?
Yes, I'd like to start press conferences for football stadiums and podcasts by asking God to deliver chicken wings or something. I don't know.
God save the Cubs, please.
Oh, geez.
Oh, they're doing fine. They're tied. They're still tied for first.
They're good. They're good.
Brewers lost again. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that was nice.
All it has
Thank
to
you,
happen.
Royals.
Everybody in the Central just needs to lose every day, and they do.
Mm.
I do want to give you credit. You did make a good point. I think it was on Twitter. I think it was on Monday, too, when I was sitting at the Cubs game. I saw it. It's not so much weird that the Cubs are good despite missing, you know, Bellinger and Saya and Steele for a while, but it's like they should be even better.
Yeah.
They should be even better.
Yeah, with all those losses, if the bullpen was mediocre,
right,
they'd have three or four more wins.
Yeah,
it's just proof that they hired the right guy when they hired Ryan Flaherty to be the bench coach.
Wait a second.
Right.
I will say this. One of the games, like the Brewers game that they lost, they only scored one run. Like the offense has been a bit, like I don't want to, consistent versus inconsistent has always been a weird thing for me. But like they are up and down. Like they're
very much so.
They'll have games when, like today.
Like, great today.
Holy cow.
One damn hit only on a little roller that Yan Gomes hit that didn't even leave the infield.
But two or three walks, then they get two or three walks, maybe.
They did, yeah.
But still in Cease, you're supposed to get like seven.
Right.
Right.
That's the issue.
You're just supposed to strike out for all your outs, which that part they did well.
Does this mean the Padres won the Jose Quintana trade?
That's a good way to look at it. We'll see what Drew Thorpe looks like for one day for the Sox, but...
Is he Jim Thorpe's kid?
Maybe Gil Grant Thorpe. Kid.
His
Gil Thorpe, an old
from Slapshot.
Wasn't Gil Thorpe like an old like
comic? Like a
long before we were kids.
Yeah, that's what that's
like
the first thing
a high school football coach or something. Wasn't
that the first thing? I don't remember. But like in the Sunday Funnies, right? Like that was that's what I thought when you said. I'm like, wait, is that what you're talking about? Huh. We're old.
It's still being published.
Holy cow.
It's been published since September 8th, 1958. The main character, Gil Thorpe, is the athletic director of Milford High School and coaches the football, basketball, and baseball teams. I don't know how many cheerleaders he's gotten pregnant, but it's a lot. It's almost 70 years. Speaking of the firecracker offense of the Cubs, they had to give their shortstop the day off because apparently his now has a sore knee.
Okay.
I'm talking about Dansby Swanson, for those people who don't know who the Cubs shortstop is. It is no longer Ryan Terrio, folks, if you haven't been paying attention. But it's funny, at the first thing, when they said he had a sore knee, I got to think, you see these on Instagram a lot. Someone will get hurt. And they'll have to limp around the house, and then their dog will start to sympathy limp.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wondered if this is still left over from Mallory blowing out her knee.
And there you go.
Dansby really isn't hurt. He's just gotten so used to limping that they're like, "What's fucking wrong with Dansby? Like, do you need a day off? Why? Oh, never mind. You're limping around. It might not be sympathy pains. He's been not good.
No, he has not been good.
And it made me think, when was the last time he was good? I was trying to think. And I decided he was last good at the beginning of July last year, before he hurt his foot. And so there have been 101 games played. He has played 101 games since he came off the disabled list late that July. This is the $170 million Cubs shortstop. In those 101 games... He has 16 homers, 56 RBIs. He has struck out 111 times in 369 at-bats. And his slash line is, hold on to your butts for how good this is.
Oh, boy.
220, 305, 396.
Oh, that's only about 150 OPS better than Nick Madrigal.
701.
Yeah.
OPS.
That's only slightly better than...
550 or so. Like Dansby Swanson. I bring everything back to Nick Madrigal.
He had two hits the other night, so he's up to 560.
Oh, all right,
Nick Madrigal.
He's on a heater.
Yeah, on Monday he got his
average up from 195 all the way to 222.
He actually hit the shit out of the ball on Monday night. He had that one that liner to right field.
Yeah, that set up the bases loaded.
He didn't score the run.
That's exactly. Right. I actually said that.
Hit it too hard.
Yeah.
Way to go, Nick. What a fun time.
Yeah.
Ian Happ had a 44 mile an hour base hit in that game.
Yeah, Dansby hasn't been good. That strikeout rate is, holy cow, that's bad.
I was, they needed to get a shortstop.
Mm.
And I felt like when they were shopping, then it was, of course, they're going to go Dansby. He's going to be the cheapest of the four.
Yeah.
And my only real concern about Dansby was the Braves were locking up everybody.
Yes.
Right.
We have this great young core and we're going to keep everybody together.
Yeah.
And, but Dansby, not so fast. You know, everybody step forward. You want to get your new contract. Dansby, not so fast.
Yeah.
And they didn't have anybody. I guess they had Vaughn Grissom, maybe, at the time. That they might have thought. Yep. But they were like, ah, we're good. Go, good luck. Go get some.
Yeah. I mean, part of it, I think, is that they're so good so everywhere else that it's not,
But then I was pleasantly surprised by him last year as to, like, when you only watch a guy, you know, a few times a year and then in the playoffs, you don't really appreciate, like, everybody's always a good defensive shortstop. Yes. And if you look at his metrics, they're not, nothing jumps out. Hey.
Not yet.
In fact, like his, the one I looked at was like, is his, does his arm suck? Because like mile per hours on throws was so bleh. But then you watch it play and you realize one of the things I like about it, it's kind of one of the fun things to watch Dansby do is his whole, it's almost like he plays a little, to amuse himself, he only throws the ball hard enough to beat the guy by one step.
Right.
And so when he needs to, he actually does have a pretty good arm, but he doesn't use it a lot. And so defensively, he was supposed to be really good. I actually thought he was better. Like, I appreciated him more than I did before. And then offensively, we had braced ourselves because his, typically in April, he was terrible with the Braves. Every year, always dug himself a huge hole. And then last year, he didn't. And he thought, oh, well, look at this guy, have a huge year. And he played well. He was an all-star. People remember that. And then he's been bad ever since. And it could simply be he had a bad foot last year and he's got something wrong with him right now. Or it could be that the Braves were right.
Well, I feel like he's never been like, he was never a great hitter. If he was, like, you know, 12% above average hitter, he'd be, you know, $250 million.
Yeah. Well, as Michael Cerami from Bleacher Nation told us, he's not supposed to hit. They're not paying him to hit.
Yeah, well, that's...
It's like, ah, they're paying him to do everything. That's what the paycheck is for. He's supposed to be like in a, well, he's supposed to hit in the middle of your order.
Yeah.
Right.
And he is.
Yeah.
He's batting in it. He's not really hitting in it. He's batting in the middle of the order.
But it's also like he should, like, on the Cubs, he should probably be hitting sixth or seventh. Like, with when Bellinger and Say are healthy, that moves everybody down a couple spots.
But they got a lot of guys that should be hitting seventh now. Like, half the team.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, him and Hap can't bat at the same time, although maybe they should try it.
Yeah. Stack one on top of the other. Or maybe have Nick Madrigal on Ian Happ's shoulders. That would be great.
Dansby bats in the right-handed box, Happ bats in the left-handed box.
There you go.
I mean, the good thing, I can't even make this joke because Happ walks so much, but the good thing about Happ hitting third is at least it spreads out the automatic outs. But he really does have a really good eye.
So I guess my question for you guys is, are you worried about Dansby Swanson and his 5.5 more seasons of lots of money playing shortstop for the Cubs?
Nah.
Before today, I would have said yes. To be determined, we'll say what he looks like when he gets back from this knee injury. But I mean,
so you're saying that today, finding out that he's dealing with an injury, now you
makes you optimistic.
That's what happened today. That you feel like, okay, now I understand. Is that what you're saying?
It's more so the fact that, like, one thing I think the Cubs have gotten much better in this season, and this is not exactly a great thing, but you've seen it in years past where guys will just, like, sit on the bench when they have little nagging injuries where they could have been on the injured list. They probably, you know, could have just gone immediately, spent maybe a day or two more than what the injury really required of them. To me, if we are just now hearing about the injury with Dansby Swanson, you know, with all the guys that had been on the injured list prior to today, you would think that if he had said something to the Cubs, that, you know, that is what really would have been affecting him. So we'll see. I think maybe just time off to take a physical break would be good for him. Do we know for sure is he going on the injured list, or is it just a matter of, like, they're giving him the day off and combining it with the day off tomorrow and hoping that he's still available in Pittsburgh?
Well, he doesn't need an MRI. He's fine. Doesn't need an MRI. I'm just kidding. This is the Cubs trainer's approach to everything. That bone sticking out of his leg? No, that's normal. Council said after the game that they gave him today off because they have tomorrow off. And they thought that 2 days off would, you know, they could get him back in and everything would be fine. So we'll see.
much to the chagrin of what Boog has told us about him, because isn't that like a huge talking point for Boog that, like, Dansby always says to Council, I never want a day off, like, from a game combined with a day off the next day. I want to, like, never take more than a day off from playing.
He did say that, and then what I would say to Dansby is, you don't manage the fucking team. So play when I tell you to play, pretty boy. Hey, how about this? You don't have to wear your hat today, so your hair is going to look that much better after that's the game. True. Congratulations.
Well, hey, counterpoint to that, if he hadn't spoken up to Jed Hoyer last season, you know, we wouldn't have had the July and August that was exciting as it was.
Well, yeah, I mean, I one of the things I appreciate about Dansby was basically him telling Jed, why do the Cubs ever rebuild?
Right.
Like, why do you need to do that? There you have multiple ways to acquire players. You don't have to get bad for 3 years just to get good players. I also feel like that was like a cutesy story that the Cubs told. I don't think they were like, you know what? Dansby's right. We're not trading guys. They started winning games before the trade deadline, which is why they kept everybody.
Why?
I don't know that it was Dansby banging his shoe on the table and convincing everybody. But I do like the fact that he says it, and he says it like publicly, because he's publicly shaming them out of, you know, he's 100% right.
Yes.
Like, they don't have to do this. They choose to do it. They don't have to do it. And they do it because it's cheap.
Yes.
Yep.
They just take a couple of years off from paying guys. That's why they do it. They'll act like, oh no, this is why. You know, guy we're talking about later, you know, you end up with a really high draft pick, and you take a guy who I think's turned out to be a really good pick for them, Cade Horton.
Yeah.
If you were picked at 22nd, you still would have picked instead of picking 9th or whenever they got him.
Yeah.
So you can't even say they maximized the top 10 draft pick, because the guy they identified was a guy that they had valued, and I think correctly so.
But you can't trade
higher
down
than other teams did.
Yeah. But you can't trade down.
So no, you can't.
You're kind of stuck. I mean, if you don't take him 9th, then.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. In this quick reset.
Yeah, I see what Andy's saying. Like,
they got a high pick, and then they're like, nah, we like this guy. And I don't think they were wrong.
Well, it also, like, I mean, to Dansby's point, they did trade for a former number 4 pick in a draft, and that's turned out great.
Nick Madrigal, Andy.
Yeah.
Yeah. If we wanted
to, like, get to that. I just try to, like, block him out.
Yeah, I can't help it. Every time I get on this podcast, it's all I want to talk about. That's not true.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We talked about that number. That's the whole reason he's still in the big leagues.
It's because he was the number 4 pick. Yeah.
He gets extra chances because of that for some.
But why would the Cubs? Like, why? Like, they didn't pick him.
Maybe they just think he's cute. he's adorable. We can't send him down. He's like having a teddy bear on the team.
Yeah. I thought I remember
cheeks.
I do think I remember hearing that, like, the guy the Cubs really wanted from the White Sox at that time was Andrew Vaughn.
Yeah.
I mean, pick your poison there, because he's not really all that great anymore, but.
How about this, guys? Maybe don't trade with the White Sox.
Right.
They don't have any good players.
Yeah. No, as they prove now.
Yeah.
On a daily basis. They got nothing. They got nothing on the big league roster. They got nothing in the minors. They got a whole lot of nothing.
Well, they beat the Cardinals up pretty good, huh?
Oh, yeah.
That was nice of them.
the Cardinals are bad. I'm going to get to them later.
All right.
I'm pretty sure people knew it at the time. Part of the reason, supposedly, they traded Craig Kimbrell to the White Sox when he was super valuable, and he really was. Yep. I mean, he was having an amazing year. And we know closers are worth a crap load at the deadline because they can impact so many games in the playoffs.
Yep.
Was that his daughter was sick and was in the hospital in Chicago, and this way he didn't have to
Oh, yeah.
They didn't have to leave her. They didn't have to move her. That was part of Jed's motivation to trade with the White Sox. And I really do think they, Cody Hoyer, Jed's illegitimate son, who spells his name differently, was supposed to be just as big a part of that trade as Madrigal. And then he caught the Tommy John, and he's pitching for the Long Island Ducks or whatever.
But why didn't was his rehab so bad that they just didn't bring him back?
I don't think he's ever going to be right.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm asking, I guess so.
Yeah.
They thought he was going to come back and pitch last year, and then he kept having setbacks, and then they dropped him off the 40-man, then nobody picked him up forever. Somebody's got him now.
Currently on the 60-day IL, funny enough, in the Texas Rangers organization.
Yeah. Interesting. So,
probably not going to pitch there, but hey, if he's collecting a check, good for him.
Yeah, sure, why not? And it's on the Rangers, so. But yeah, I wish they would have done something more with this book. But like, it didn't really have to be guys. Like, we're talking about the bullpen. We're talking about Cody Hoyer. Anyway.
So the return of Cody Bellinger has inched Ian Happ down the lineup.
Good.
And then hopefully the return of Seiya will inch him down even farther.
Yeah.
Hopefully out of it.
I think it's going to be out of it, but there's at least Madrigal sees a lot less time. He's got nowhere to go.
He is hitting 225, 346, 302. He is your Cubs left fielder, who you have signed for $20 million a year for the next 3 years, is slugging 302.
302. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
And I was just going to say that he slugged 505 in 2020. He slugged 564 in 2019. Since then, he has slugged 434, 440, 431, and now 302. Mm-hmm. And he's 30 years old. Mm-hmm. I got news for the Cubs. He's never slugging 500 again.
Nope.
And you're paying him like he does. And he doesn't. Yep, and I didn't understand at the time why you just had to keep this guy.
Yeah. You know,
there was a time when Happ projected to have a lot of value because they were trying him. At first, he was supposed to be a second baseman.
Yep.
And his numbers he was putting up at the time, if he could have stuck at second base, that's really valuable. Then they were in the center, and you're like, okay, his bat would play in center. But the minute you kicked him to a corner outfield, especially left, because he's still, his arm is super accurate. He also could throw the ball about 100 feet in the air.
Yeah, because they needed a cutoff man to gun down Pete Alonso at home plate.
Yes.
Right.
But as Book said, only about 30% of National League third basemen would have made that throw that Nick Madrigal made. He's only off by 70%, I think.
Yeah. 30% of the 16-inch softball third baseman in my league.
Nobody, and he wasn't even saying make the throw like that accurately. He said he didn't think anybody would throw it. Like, they would have just caught the ball and not thrown it. It's like everybody would have, because that was the game.
Right.
Like, you make it a throw, you win the game. It's Pete Alonso. You could hear him lumbering around third.
Well, that wasn't that much further than like a throw from behind third base to first.
The reason it worked with those two was it played into the fact that both of them have accurate but short arms.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a long throw from Happ to Madrigal, and it wasn't a long throw from Madrigal to Amaya. Yeah. That's the whole reason it worked.
Yep.
But it's just like that game in Milwaukee last year where the Happ threw the two guys out from basically third base.
Yeah.
And everybody, what a great arm. It's like, well, he is an accurate arm.
Yeah.
He does not have a strong arm at all.
It was like watching, like, when you go out golfing and you golf with like 80-year-old men and they like just sit there and hit 2 5-irons off the tee, and they just go straight, but 150 yards and boom, next thing you know, they're shooting an 80.
Yep. Like, wow, this guy's always in the ball fairway.
The thing that frustrates me the most about Ian Happ, and I talked to a buddy about this a couple days ago, it's really not totally his fault, but the fact that, during the era after the World Series, when the Cubs were still a pretty decent team as a playoff contender, and, they were having their offensive woes in the games that really mattered the most, either down the stretch or in the playoffs, Ian Happ was every bit as part of that failure as Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant, Javier Baez were. Except, where's the ring on his finger? And, you know, how did he become more worthy of getting a contract extension than any of those guys? Now, obviously, you're happy with the fact that they didn't extend, you know, Bryant and Baez to, you know, this day, seeing what they're playing like. But it just makes you wonder, like, what did they see in him that they didn't see in those guys at the time?
That he was willing to take only a 3-year deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why did they give him – why does he have a no-trade clause?
Does he really?
Yes.
I mean, nobody would take him anyway.
No. That's $20 million. The $60 million is a no-trade all by itself.
Yeah.
But just the fact that they gave it to him, it's like, what the fuck? I guess that was his reward for only taking the 3-year deal.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, take 3 years.
We'll commit. You could spend all 3 years here. You don't have to worry about us shipping you off to somebody else. Yeah, in 2018 you know, when they had the good team that just stopped hitting at the end of the year, he hit .233, struck out 167 times in 387 at-bats.
I remember that was the year that... 2019,
he spent the whole first half of the season in Iowa.
I remember that was the year in 2018, he had, like, the lowest, like, Z contact percentage, which is, like, contact on pitches in the strike zone of any hitter with over 400 plate appearances.
Yeah.
So
any pitch near the letters, he swung at it always and never hit. Like, and he's basically stopped doing that. One of the things that amused me in a bad way was last year when they were talking about all the adjustments he made and how he's sacrificing. Remember, he didn't have hardly any extra base hits in the first half. He was slugging just. It was not 302, but it was bad. And the defenders on Sahadev and then on Marquis would tell you, no, he's changed his approach. And he's getting more contact. But he wasn't making – but he was still striking out just as much. He struck out 153 times last year. He struck out 149 times the year before. So he struck out more times with the
– Yeah.
He just didn't hit for power. It's like, well, maybe scrap that approach then. And he did, apparently, in the second half. He said, well, I don't care if I strike out. It's like, well, he struck out just as much. And he did get a few more extra base hits. This year, he's on a pace. He's going to strike out. He's on a pace to strike out more than he ever has.
Yeah, he's always struck out. Like, that hasn't changed. It's just him taking more walks, maybe not swinging. I don't know, whatever. I'm not defending him.
The only thing he's doing right now is he's walking.
Yeah, yes.
So that's the best you can hope for when you're.
Yep.
You know, he had that. I mean, I know why they hit him third. Half the lineup was gone. But still, when the best you can hope for when your third hitter come up is that he walks.
Right.
That's.
See.
I will say the 2015 draft. I just looked it up. Holy cow, is it bad?
Yes. Yeah. I want to say he's like the sixth highest WAR of anyone in that draft.
I believe it.
I want to say Andrew Benintendi was the pick right before him to the Red Sox.
Yeah, Carson Fulmer was right before him, which is kind of hilarious.
Carson Fulmer.
Yeah, to the White Sox.
Okay.
I mean, the White Sox could have had Ian Happ.
He'd been perfect. Well, they got Benintendi.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. If they would have had Ian Happ, they wouldn't have had to trade for Eloy Jimenez.
There you go. See, that's – if only there were draft pick trades in baseball, Theo could have put that one over on – was it Rick Hahn at the time or was it still Kenny Williams? I don't know.
Yeah,
do we know why you can't – I mean, now you could trade
Yeah, like the supplemental or the –
Yeah, those you could trade. You can't trade
balance. Yeah.
I would venture to guess –
I want
to
hear your theory. I have a theory as to why they don't have –
I could see it changing within the next few years just because the draft has now gone down only, is it only, what, 10 or 15 rounds when it used to be 40?
No, in 2020, it was five for the COVID.
Thank God the Cubs stole Matt Mervis because of that.
Spencer Strider was a fifth-round pick that year, right? No, I think it's back up to 20, maybe 30. It's not 30 anymore.
I think it's more than that. It used to be.
It used to be unlimited, right?
You could pick until you stopped picking.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, once you passed, you were done.
Yeah.
So, right. Like, if the Cubs, after 42 rounds, were like, nah. But the Dodgers are going to keep picking until they get Mike Piazza in the sixth round. Like, they might be the only team still picking.
Yes.
Like, with the Dodgers? Yeah. Yeah. You guys want another? We got another guy. All right, fine. Yeah. And it used to be a conference call.
Yep.
And well, here's the other thing about the Major League Baseball draft that always cracked me up. This is very baseball. For a long time, until like more recent than you would think, the only people who knew what round they got drafted in were the first rounders.
Wow.
Like they would announce when the first round completed, they would announce the first round draft picks. And then they would wait till later in the day, and then they would have an alphabetical list of who each team picked in the draft.
Wow.
And the reason it was alphabetical was so the players wouldn't know what round they were in, so that they couldn't be like, well, I'm a second round pick, I deserve this much money.
Oh.
They literally wouldn't tell them. They wouldn't put the rounds out for like a month. So the players didn't know what round they got picked in.
That is so baseball.
And
that's so fucking baseball.
Recently, it was like 20 years ago, they were still pulling that shit. I guarantee Mark Grace didn't know what round he went in until, like, you know, well, that could be for many reasons.
He was drunk.
True.
That's hilarious.
But I think the reason that the reason that you couldn't draft picks before was like the structure of the draft.
Yeah.
It's literally like just a bunch of assholes like yelling into their speaker, into their Charlie's Angels speaker kind of thing. And there was no mechanism in place really to do it. I mean, obviously you could have just called around. It's not like the NFL and the NBA drafts where everybody was in the same place. Well, now it is. And now that it is, it seems like to liven up the draft, we should let them trade again.
Right.
Because the draft would actually be fun. Like, not only can you trade draft picks at the draft, you could trade guys on your 40-man for draft picks. The draft would be much more interesting than it is. Because right now, it's really only interesting for the weirdos who spend all their time, you know, following college baseball, and then the creeps who are like hanging out at the high school fields for kids they don't know to watch them play.
I don't do that, but I do watch and follow the draft. It's fun.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I mean, I wasn't talking about you. I watch it too, but I'm like, mostly I'm there just to look at the ridiculous, like, what the fuck is he wearing? Or, you know, God, who is this Pete Crow Armstrong? What is that on his head?
Or hear Harold Reynolds say some foolish thing like he could play in the big leagues right now.
Harold's never seen any of these guys play.
Right, right.
And then they ask him to compete, and then they do this thing where he compares them to like players, he just compares them all to Ken Griffey Jr.
Yep.
A lot of the guy I used to play with.
Yeah.
Gary Carter? No, I'm not that old.
But that is like I did like in this past NFL draft, like watching it, it was disappointing that there weren't more trades in like the top 10. It's always fun to hear trades, like commissioner goes, there's been a trade. It's always kind of fun to hear that. But yeah, they should. But I think they don't do it because they're still afraid of like the Yankees just buying draft picks. Like the Yankees just, here's $30 million to the Arizona Diamondbacks. Give us your first pick.
Whatever they do, the Dodgers will be the team that figures it out first.
Yeah.
How to screw everybody else over.
For sure.
Them or the Braves.
Because it's just what they do.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the Dodgers are they have to be the most hated team in every other front office. Because, you know, like the Cubs love to hide behind that we can't go over the luxury tax. Because if we do, the penalties are just so bad. And there's the Dodgers who went over the luxury tax for like 8 years in a row. They were paying the biggest penalties you possibly could. They had stars at every position, and they had like the second best farm system in baseball. And so apparently the penalties are so onerous that they don't affect the Dodgers at all because they're good at what they do. So maybe spend the fucking money. And then, if you spend it on your minor leaguers and your big leaguers, you'll probably be okay.
It was, I forgot, somebody must have mentioned, maybe it was another podcast. Like the Cubs kind of got screwed because Theo's whole plan was to go out and spend all this money on the international
players. The timing was amazing. He gets hired in
2011
right?
Yeah.
And it was the general manager meetings that happened like right after the World Series, where the Cubs' plan was we're going to trade for guys.
Yep.
Who are in their walk year, and we'll get their comp picks for them. We're gonna blow out the international draft, and we're gonna spend so much on the draft. We're gonna draft guys in the rounds 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 that are committed to colleges, and we're just gonna buy their ass out. And the So it's like 3 weeks after they get the job, all that's illegal.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, they got to sign George Soler, and then that was it.
Yep. Yeah, it was the last international
signing, whatever. Yep.
Before the rule change, yeah.
And then the next one was they got Glaber and Eloy.
Yeah.
They got that in the good old fashion. Yeah. Like, they were just good at it.
Right.
And whatever.
But there was still, like, left over. Like, I think they went into penalties for those two or something like that. But, yeah, totally.
Actually, I think they did.
So they overspent. But they, like, had already committed the money to them. But now it's just, it's hilarious how, like, you have, like, 14-year-olds are still, like, it just looked the other way. You have 14-year-olds who are still committed to teams now from the Dominican.
Well, that's why the Braves had to fire their that general manager.
Oh, yeah. Frank Wren, right?
GP or whatever his name is.
Oh, the old Blue Jays guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, not him.
No, not JP Ricciardi.
Yeah. Some other guy.
No, I'm confusing it because their current GM is a former Blue Jays guy.
Yeah,
it's Anthopoulos.
Yeah. Yeah, they were drafted. They were consulting Wander Franco on who to sign. Hey, does your girlfriend have any friends who play? Yeah, well, they're not old enough. That's right. Okay. We'll just look the other way.
Oh, my God.
Don't you know how to, like, you can, there's a reason they put an eraser on the end of that pencil. We can just fix that year on day DOB. You know, two of those guys were Ronald Acuna Jr. and Ozzie Albies. No, I don't know. Not really. I don't think any of the guys that they, I don't think any of them amounted to anything. But
well,
still.
One of them was this guy named, I remember this guy named Kevin Maitan, something like that, who was supposed to be like the best international prospect since like Miguel Cabrera. And that was one of them. And then he just signed, he got all this money. They let him keep the bonus. Then he signed with the Angels and just got fat and lazy. And that was it.
Now, I always enjoy the other end of that. I like the players who lie.
Oh, yeah.
And are like 26 years old and claim they're 18. And they're just crushing the ball. And everybody's like, oh, this guy's going to be amazing. Can you project? What's this guy going to be like when he's 22?
Yeah.
Well, do you have film from 4 years ago? Because you could see it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Seriously. There's an Law and Order episode about that. I'm not kidding.
I'm sure there is.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think there's a Law and Order episode about everything.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the hell. I mean, this is why Craig Counsell gets $8 million a year. Figure out what he's supposed to do with Ian Happ. Because he's got to play him every day. And he's got to find a place to bat him. I mean, I guess he could. You'd be like, well, he's getting on base, so you could at least lead him off. But I don't really want him getting more at bats than everybody else.
Nobody really talks about it, but sitting in Happ would solve your, like, you could keep PCA up. And you could keep Michael Busch at first. You still don't really have a DH, but once A comes up and you sit Happ, Bellinger and left.
Let me ask you this. When Saya does return, in my opinion, the three best hitting outfielders on the team would be Seiya Suzuki, Cody Bellinger, Mike Tauchman.
Yes.
Wouldn't that just be your starting outfield then?
I mean, if
you're probably your best defensive outfield.
Yeah, I mean, I've said on here, and I wasn't joking, that late in games, if you're gonna swap Madrigal for Morel, you should also be putting Tauchman in for Happ. Gold gloves or not, he's a better outfielder than Ian Happ is.
Tauchman's hitting the ball right now. Like, it's hard to justify Tauchman not getting at bats, and he's definitely a better defensive outfielder than. Two-time Gold Glove winner.
Yeah, I mean, I think clearly what they're going to do is Cody's going to go back to center. Saya's going to play right. It'll be some combination of these guys are all going to play basically every day until Mike Tauchman,
stops.
He's done this before, and you ride it as long as you can because he can get hot and he can play well for long stretches. He did it for the Yankees, he did it for the Giants, he's done it for the Cubs, and then at some point he remembers he's Mike Tauchman, and then right back to not, being that great again. Cody's going to play every day, Saya's going to play every day, Talkman's going to play every day, Bush is going to play every day.
Right.
But sometimes, I feel like Tauchman DHing is a waste of time, right?
Yeah.
If, you're going to play him. He should. He can spell one of the other, because he can play all three outfield spots. Play him in the outfield. Give that guy the half a day off. Have him. But sometimes Cody's going to play first. Talkman's going to be in center, and Bush is going to DH. Sometimes Bush is going to play first, and Cody's going to be in center, and Talkman's going to DH. Sure. Those guys are all going to play. Pete's going back to Iowa. I don't think there's any doubt. And I think at this point, right now, I think he probably should. It's very encouraging. He's played. This is what we thought. I mean, if he had done this in September, and there was a lot of reasons why he didn't do it. And part of it was he probably was a little. I mean, he got thrown into a pennant race, and he was a little. Yeah.
Right.
He seems oblivious to everything in a good way.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's impossible not to like. He's just. I like the fact he's a weird looking dude.
Right.
He is. It. Like, he just makes himself weird. And it works.
I so wish he still had the blue hair from spring training. That was such a great look for him.
He's in this stint, you've seen like the skills that we knew were there, but we just didn't really see before. And at some point this season, hopefully, like he's going to go back to Iowa. He'll hit, although it's funny, he wasn't hitting in Iowa. Everybody hits in Iowa. He wasn't hitting. He's hitting better for the Cubs than he was hitting for the Iowa Cubs. He'll go down, he'll hit. He'll have a decision to make later in the summer when it's like, all right, we need Pete on the team.
Mm-hmm.
He's ready. He got, you know, if you could get him enough at bats now, you just keep him. But we just talked about it. You got all those moving pieces. So he's going to go down, and that'll kind of clear that log jam up. The question I would ask is, if Ian Happ wasn't making $20 million a year and wasn't, you know, the Marquis' favorite player, which is part of the reason why I just – everything they overhype him to the point it just grates on me all the time.
Right.
Also these guys' favorite player too.
Yes. Oh, obviously, yeah. Sure, loves him. And these guys. That's for those of you listening at home. Everybody except for the three of us who can actually see Prez. He was holding up his Light the W Obvious shirt at the time. Happ would be in some kind of platoon with Talkman.
I don't know why
he wouldn't be. He wouldn't. You wouldn't play him at all against a lefty,
right?
Because he can't hit them at all. You just wouldn't even have him in the lineup. Although I don't know, it wouldn't really help Talkman.
Yeah, I was going to say
face a lefty, but he's better at it than Happ is.
Ian Happ is a really good fourth outfielder. Gets on base, passable defense, like. Mm-hmm. He's a good fourth outfielder.
Yeah.
If only he was getting paid like one.
He's a sunk cost.
Right.
You don't have to put him out there every day.
Yeah.
Right.
Nothing says you have to pay him $20 million a year. You don't have to play him every day.
That might even give him more time to be on marquee.
Well, think about if he was on the bench more. Think about how much time he could spend staring into his helmet at the magic dots. That would probably get him out of his slump. Craig, all I need to do is for like the next
week.
Yeah, the next 10 days.
Right.
I just need to stare into this helmet.
Yeah, he's
I come out of it's like my Aaron Rodgers darkness retreat. When I pull my head out of this helmet, I will be Barry Bonds.
He's reading out of the helmet the same way the guy who found the Mormon religion read it out of a hat.
Does
Joseph Smith
magic underwear for Ian Happ?
Yeah.
Yep.
Does Obvious Shirts make magic underwear? Now, I made a new shirt for the DeCipio store. I don't know if you guys saw it.
I did see, yes.
I was going to say, you should put it on the DeCipio store.
It says, left field sucks.
Yes, yes.
The left field sucks. Yeah.
May have to wear that next time I'm out there.
Yeah, I can cut you a deal.
You know, people.
So Seiya today played 5 innings for the Iowa Cubs.
Yeah.
Ooh, I didn't actually see this.
And he was good. I mean, he had 2 hits and a walk.
2 for 2 with a walk and 2 runs scored.
And okay. I would guess the plan is that he plays more tomorrow, and then maybe I would guess he's probably back Friday. Right?
Or Saturday against Paul Skeens.
Yes. I get why they send guys out on rehab things. It's to like work the kinks out.
Yeah. But
if I were Craig looking at my lineup card today, I would have said, I can say it just rehab here.
Right.
Because we need him. I'd rather, you know, his replacement's going 0-for-4. Say it might go 1-for-4.
Yeah. And like, I get why pitchers have to do it, but to your point, like, 4 at-bats is, I mean, I guess you want to maximize whatever you can get, but generally speaking, what are you gonna rehab against AAA pitchers? Like,
I was gonna say, yeah, the quality of the pitchers he's facing isn't really gonna do.
I mean, I think the only way you do it, it made sense to me then that they're like, okay, we know that he's ready to play a full, like, we want him to play half the game, and then we're gonna see if his oblique has fallen off again. And then tomorrow he's going to play a full game, and then we'll see if his oblique has fallen off. And if his oblique hasn't fallen off, he's going to be up. I do know from the guys I used to, when I was with the Snappers, the guys I would talk to, was that like, the Brewers used to send guys out on rehab assignments for two reasons. Number one, to get the guys some at-bats, but also to sell some tickets at the affiliates.
That would make sense. Okay.
And there's a famous story about Jeff Jenkins rehabbing in Beloit.
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
And he only had to play like the first 5 innings. And then after the game, they were trying to find him because some of the local media wanted to. And he was literally under the bleachers with a woman he had met between him leaving the game and the end of the game. And I'm sure he told her he was Brett Favre.
Yeah. Yep.
His exact I went to the Stanford game. I made out with Brett Favre.
Wow.
Wow. The affiliates will fight over, like, if a prominent, like, Saya, like, everyone on the Cup affiliates would have wanted Saya's rehab start.
I bet, yeah.
We're gonna sell a few extra tickets to come see Saya. I remember as a kid, we went to see Damon Berryhill in a rehab game
catcher
for the Rockford Cubbies.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yes, it was. Greatness.
Was Rick Wilkins his backup?
Wilkins was probably in Rockford, maybe. Yeah.
One of the great moments in Rockford minor league history, they do not have an affiliated thing, was the first team ever they had were the Rockford Expos.
Oh.
And their hotshot player that first year was Delino DeShields.
Oh.
Oh, very nice.
And somewhere, I've never been able to find the clip. I know people at the TV station. I wonder if they still have it. So there was I guess they were the NBC affiliate. Now they're the ABC affiliate. They switched. There was a sports guy named Kim Lepak, and he was interviewing Delino on the field, like, during warmups, and for a piece he was going to run that night. And it was during batting practice, and Kim, guy hit a ball, and Kim had 3 balls. Line drive right to the nuts while he was interviewing Delino DeShields. It is one of the great sports bloopers of all time.
Oh, man.
But football to the balls has football to the balls.
Kim played basketball at one of the UWs, like lacrosse maybe, or
Whitewater.
But, yeah, one of them. And he was we would play with him at the Rockford Y, and he was an amazing shooter. He was like the Oscar Schmidt of Rockford YMCA basketball. He was I'm sure he still is, he was a very hairy man. And there were guys always there who would be like, you know, he'd be like, when he was playing, you know, we'd split into shirt and skins, and invariably everybody'd be yelling at Kim, "You got to take that thing off, man. We can't tell what team you're on. Take your sweater off. Fuck you." Never. They did it every time, and it was never not hilarious. All right, so I have a question for you guys. I posed it right before we started, so you couldn't give it too much thought. But now I don't want to harp on Nick Madrigal, but
yes, you do.
It just his mere existence annoys me. I know I've talked about this on a previous pod, and we just kind of did it in passing. So I want you two experts to tell me. Nick is currently hitting .222 for the Cubs. And it's clearly not worth having him on the big league roster, given that, you know, he's slugging .289. What would he need to hit to justify being on a big league roster, given that he doesn't walk, so his on-base average is hit-dependent, and he doesn't slug? And, you know, I would, if Dansby's hurt for any amount of time, he's going to be playing some second base, which I don't think anybody wants to see. And he's supposedly the fill in at third. But just what would Nick have to hit for you to be like, yeah, it's worth having him? And then when, after you guys think about this, I've got a guy that I feel like he has to play as well as to be worth a roster spot in the big leagues.
He would have to hit at least as good, which is a very loose term, as Juan Pierre in 2003.
Okay. 2003. Okay.
So what I'm looking that?
I mean, about 300, an empty 300.
Yeah.
Because he's not going to slug. Like, no, he's not going to slug. And even then, like, it still wouldn't be like Juan Pierre sucked. Like, it was, it was.
Juan Pierre that year, 305, 361, 373 is 734 OPS and 94 OPS plus for him.
I'm a little surprised that his on base was that high. So
hold on. Side note here, a 94 OPS plus, and he wound up getting MVP votes enough to finish 10th in NL MVP voting.
And I will guarantee you he led the National League in outs because he did almost every year.
Right.
Nobody made more outs than Juan Pierre because he played every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he batted more. He batted more than any other player in the National League.
Yep.
And he didn't get on base. So he just made a shitload of outs.
Yeah. It's that empty, like I said, it's that empty single slap hitting. And even then, like, Juan Pierre sucked. Like I said, like he sucked.
It's like how, you know, when we were kids, if you got one of those chocolate bunnies for Easter, I'm sure you got a lot of Easter candy. But those things were, that was a big chunk of chocolate. And now you get one, and it's hollow.
Right.
Didn't they? You always used to. They didn't used to be hollow.
No, you used to be. You used to get. You could buy them, and they would be. That would be just a big thing of chocolate, and you could.
Oh, man.
Stomach ache by the time you finish the ears.
I always remember them being hollow. I guess it was.
I'm sure there were always hollow ones, but you could get like solid ones. And now you just, I don't think there's any way you could get a solid one. They're all Nick Madrigal.
I think that's.
They're all Nick Madrigal.
Hollow Easter Bunny. That's his new nickname. He's not Nicky Two Strikes. He's Nicky Hollow Easter Bunny.
There you go.
Chocolate Easter Bunny.
I'm looking at his career stats right now. Like, the years with the White Sox actually had a pretty high average those 2 years he was there in, you know, very limited time.
The player the Cubs traded for, although there was a big red flashing light when he did it, he hasn't been anywhere close to that.
No,
right.
He's been awful for them.
Truly has been.
Like, it was all about, like, just a contact hitter, superior, you know. He still doesn't strike out, but he doesn't walk. And, like I said, when he does hit it hard, it's to make sure that the runner from second can score.
Yep. Yeah.
He never hits it the correct hardness amount or correct exit velocity. To answer the question, I think with him, to make it justifiable to have him on the roster, he has to hit – no less than like 280. Assuming like his career, you know, walk rate and slugging percentage stays as meager as it is.
Yeah, not at 280. His on base percentage would be like 305.
Yeah, I think he has to hit 320 to be a big league player.
Yeah,
and I think the guy he needs to play, if he can't play as well as this guy, he has to be Luis Arraez. Is who he has to be.
Yeah,
that's a guy who somehow makes all batting average and nothing else palatable. But he's still – Luis Arraez is still not that valuable. Like, Padres gave up a bunch for him, but it's like he – you know, his best defensive position is first base.
Yeah.
You can't play that bad at first base. Yeah. So they're DHing him. That's insane.
Yeah,
Luis Arraez.
DHing a singles hitter. Imagine, you know – if that was available for Tony Gwynn back in the day, they weren't going to DH him.
I bet Arraez, I know he doesn't have any power, but I bet, like, I mean, Tony Gwynn, like, those guys still hit doubles. Like, I bet Arraez hits
doubles.
That's true. Here you go. I have the comparison of Nick Madrigal and Luis Arraez. They are the same age. They are 27 years
old. Why do you have it on note cards?
Oh, it's on a...
Oh, okay.
On Baseball Reference.
Okay.
It's a reporter's notebook.
Oh, cool. All right.
They're both 27 years old. Luis Arraez, career batting average, 324.
Yeah.
Nick Madrigal, 277.
Sure.
Dropping like a rock. This year, Arai's 307.
Yeah.
And he's at 307, it's a coin flip whether or not you really want to pay him in the lineup.
Yeah.
Nick Madrigal this year, 222. Career homers, Luis Arai. They both have zero this year. Big shock.
Yep.
Luis Arai has six times as many home runs as Nick Madrigal. He has 24.
Yep.
Nick has four. On base percentage, Arai is actually higher than I thought it was going to be. 378 mm-hmm. career on base. It's 354 yeah. this year, which is kind of it's borderline for him. Nick Madrigal, career on base average 325, 271 mm-hmm. this year. Slugging, Arai's for his career 423, and it's only 379 this year. Nick Madrigal, career 351, 289 this year. Stolen bases, Nick's got it. Nick has 17 career stolen bases in 23 attempts. He's 1-for-1 this year.
Yeah.
Arai's doesn't have a stolen base this year. He's 11-for-21 in his career. It's barely a 50%
yeah.
success rate. Now he stopped running. But OPS plus for his career, Arai's 122, Madrigal 86. Arai's is 110 this year, Madrigal 60. War, mm-hmm. career, Arai's 15.4, Nick is 3.4. This year, Arai's 0.4, and Nick is minus 0.1.
Yeah.
And the WRC plus for their careers, 123 for Arai's, 89 for Madrigal.
Yeah.
113 this year for Arai's and 63 for little Nicky.
Yeah, it's because Arai's walks about 4 percentage points higher than Madrigal. And like I said, he also hits doubles. Like Arai's, he said 30 doubles in a season a couple times.
Yeah.
I can't imagine the Madrigal on a rate will come anywhere near that.
No, career high for Madrigal was last year with 16.
Yeah, but, games, the plate appearances don't quite match up, so you can't look at the right. raw numbers. But I can't imagine Madrigal ever having a year where he hits 30 doubles.
No.
No chance.
Arai's was playing second base for the Marlins this year, and it's only been a month. His mm-hmm. his outs above average, he's in the first percentile. Minus 7.
Wow.
In a month. Minus 7.
In a month.
You can fall well down and make
would be better off not playing, just letting balls roll through over there, I think. I think that would be like a minus 5. It's like Norman Dale. They're like, you guys going to play a second baseman? And Skip Schumacher's like, my team is on the field. You don't have anybody at second. We don't need it. Trust us. It doesn't get better if we put this guy there. Luis is like, are you talking about me?
Yeah, I know. I you might be onto something. Like I said, I think it's got to be even more than that, just because Madrigal won't walk nearly as much.
Yeah, he's actually
Rice doesn't walk.
Right, either, Rice is a better all around player, all around hitter.
Yeah,
Nick
all around hitter. Yes,
like it would have to be a Rice plus 10% on the batting average. Like I don't think 350 does it. To your point,
basically, what this long convoluted argument is. Nick can't do it.
No.
He can't play well enough to be worth a big league roster spot.
No.
We would have seen it by now. I mean, yeah. Praz alluded to it. His career numbers with the White Sox, he only played 83 games for them.
In 2 years.
He came up late the first season, and then he got hurt. Oh, shocker, he got hurt. Here's another tip for Jed. Don't trade for guys on the 60-day injured list. Just go. It's like when Grant Hill signed with the Magic.
Oh, yeah.
And he was in a cast. Don't sign a guy to a 10-year contract who's wearing a cast
for
the signing. Just don't do it.
Didn't he sign like a 5-year deal and he only played about 100 games with the Magic?
But little Nicky with the White Sox, 317, 358, 406. So he has a 109 OPS plus. With the Cubs, 254, 306, 319, that's a 73. And it's going – so his batting average – went from 340 to 305 to 249, but rebound all the way to 263 last year. Now it's 222. His on base average has dropped every year. He got a little bit of a bump. He went from 305 to 311 last year, so bad. And his slugging is heading the wrong way quickly. Everything is trending badly. But he's in his prime. He's 27.
I bet he's getting shorter too.
Just as good as he ever gets.
He's
right
getting
now.
Shorter.
Yeah. Yeah. He's settling. He's 5'6 now instead of 5'8.
Mm-hmm. That's where you got your extra half inch.
Yeah, I borrowed it from Nick.
Yeah.
All right.
Here's
a fun fact I saw today. I don't know how fun it is. Al's Eli's ERA is down to 4.70.
Good. Last night on the other podcast I do, one thing we like to do is do like hidden stats for two different players and which one you would pick between the two. I chose to do with Adbert Alzolay and Josh Hader for this season.
That's not fair.
Josh Hader's ERA is a full run higher than where Adbert was at going into last night. Obviously, I don't really trust Adbert at this point to go back into the closer role, but, you know, as someone who can come into games and preserve a slight deficit, as he's been used in recent games, don't mind it.
He threw one and a third innings of one hit ball today.
Yep.
Hader gave up more runs in April this year than he gave up last year.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
There's something wrong with him.
Yeah, you've seen his tweets. Oh, you mean physically. Not just the homophobia. Well, that brings us, that segues us nicely to who should be closing for the Cubs. Hector Neris has been doing it, and it's been successful, but it's a
roller coaster
walks
ride.
In 12 innings?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is a guy who, if he had a history of this, like, oh, he pitches around walks, you wouldn't like it, but you'd deal with it. But Hector, one of Hector's biggest strengths his whole career has been he doesn't walk anybody. He doesn't give up home runs. He doesn't walk anybody. And so this is, like, way out of whack for him. He's throwing, like his just strike percentage is way down. His walk rate is way up. And that's not good.
No. I mean, I think eventually I wouldn't mind seeing Bun Brown do it. But beyond that, I like your argument today.
I actually didn't get a chance to read it, but.
Well, and I wasn't arguing for this guy to be the closer. But I was arguing, and so it kind of had to do with the news that Pirates are going to unleash Paul Skenes on the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Saturday now, not Friday.
Yep, yep.
Because originally the report was he was going to pitch on Friday. And the similarity that Skenes and Cade Horton, the Cubs' number one pick from 2 years ago, have is the way they're being used in the minor leagues.
Yes.
And it makes sense for Horton. It doesn't make sense for Skenes. So, you know, Skenes was the Friday night pitcher for LSU, and he pitched 8 or 9 innings all the time. He routinely pitched 110, 120 pitches, and he's just kind of built for it, right? Mm-hmm. Like any pitcher can get hurt. The Pirates get him, and I know why they did it. They sent him to the minors, and they wouldn't let him pitch more than 4 innings in any game. And I think what they're doing is they're like, he's only going to pitch X amount of innings this year. We want to pitch most of those for us.
Right.
But the question would be, why the fuck is he in the minors anyway?
Correct.
He's clearly ready, and he embarrassed minor league.
Oh, God, yeah.
They didn't come close to hitting him.
Yep.
And really, all you were doing was the guy who is like, who's trained to pitch 110 pitches is now throwing 58.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he's going to come up and you're not going to ramp him. They're going to use him like this in the big leagues. He's going to pitch 5 innings probably, and that's going to be about it. The Cubs are doing the same thing with Horton. And with Horton, it makes sense because where Skenes was a workhorse and pitched a lot, Horton didn't pitch that much at
all. Right.
He was a freaking third string quarterback for a while before he became a pitcher. When he became a pitcher, he wasn't any good. And then all of a sudden he, you know, there was literally the College World Series when he like figured out his breaking pitch and they're like, holy shit, this guy's good.
Yeah.
And to give the Cubs credit, they saw it in a small sample and went, no, this guy's a really good arm and now he's got an out pitch. We're going to get him. So they're still building him up. But
yeah,
my whole thinking is if you're going to limit the pitches that he throws, which is fine, why are we wasting him in Des Moines? Just put him in your bullpen.
Yep.
And you can limit 100 innings this year. He pitches, you know, he's already thrown 20. He throws 80 innings out of your bullpen. And you can give him extra days. You can do all kinds of stuff. He's in the bullpen. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to pitch him. And, you know, this idea that, you know, you got to train a guy to be a starter to be a starter. And I went back, you know, I mean, I remember Carlos Zambrano broke in as a relief. He actually pitchers used to break in all the time.
Yeah.
That's how they
did it. Adam Wainwright with the Cardinals.
All the time, yeah, enough.
Well, like back in the the good old days, like in the 70s, that was a really common thing. Bullpens were completely different.
Yeah.
They were guys who weren't good enough to start or young guys who were trying to figure out if they were
any good. Yeah. Well, yeah, to your point, you made the point Chris Sale started.
Chris Sale, I think it's probably the best example. The White Sox long-term plan for him was to be a starter.
Yeah.
But, he's got the weird body and it almost looks like his elbow is going to break in half. And they eased him in as a really good reliever. And then the minute that they made him a starter, he went for the first 7 years as a starter, he finished in the top five in Cy Young voting in the American League with either the White or the Red Sox.
Yeah.
And they tried doing the same thing with Garrett Crochet, right? He was a reliever last year, and now he's starting this year. Somebody else just thought of it, and I lost it. Maybe it was the other way. Oh, with Michael Kopech, they kind of did that, but they moved him back to the bullpen.
Well, yeah, Michael Kopech is just not good, though.
Yeah.
Right.
He's bad.
Well, then Don Cooper had to shoot off his mouth about how it was Kopech broke up his girlfriend, and he was all screwed up. And it's he's telling all of Kopech's personal shit on Mullion Haw. Don, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I'm sure they care about that. Whoa, Chief.
But that's just my thought. You clearly need bullpen arms. That's a really good one. You're going to limit how many pitches he throws this year anyway and how many innings, and that's fine. And then if the idea is, what if he gets hurt trying to hurry up and warm up? It's
you could still space it out. Like to your point, you don't have to use him as a closer where you warm up, but you could still put him on a routine.
Yes.
Throw three innings every 4 days or even every 5 days.
Yeah. Well, and then God knows it's not like you don't have enough pitchers on this team that you're taken out after 75 pitches anyway.
Right.
You can plan it all ahead.
Right,
right.
If Jordan Wicks comes back from his sore little elbow, he's not going more than five innings.
Right.
So Cade can start warming up in the fourth inning for Jordan. He can be completely warmed up before he has to come in.
Mm-hmm.
That is a little bit more probably planning than you're comfortable with, right? Because you are playing for something. In AAA, it's kind of easier to do that because, who cares? Well, sort of who cares? But, if you're in the middle of a pennant race, it's sort of tough to be that regimented with your bullpen. You have to give guys rest and stuff like that, but you have to be pretty flexible, especially with having, only 13 pitchers. I know that that's still a lot, but.
Right. But I would think you could. What I'm saying is, you break him in as a reliever.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
You could plan it out. And then at some point, it's not that hard to get warmed up. I mean, there's a lot of dumb pitchers who figured out how to do it.
Yeah.
Justin Grimm, one of the dumbest people in the world. He knew how to warm up. He would get ready.
Right.
Yeah.
Still, my favorite Justin Grimm story was the fact that, when Jake got the final out of his no-hitter in Dodger Stadium, and they came running in out of the bullpen, and Grimm is jumping up and down like the rest of them, had no idea why they were so excited. He didn't know Jake threw a no-hitter. He just thought he threw a shutout. And he's like, this is great, but why are we this excited for a shutout?
We shut out the Dodgers. Yeah.
He threw a no-hitter. He did? Jesus Christ.
Oh, man.
Why didn't they tell me?
I like that idea. Cade Horton right now, you might as well get as much as you can out of him from this year. And would the innings limit apply to just what he would do in the major leagues? Or, would that just be levels?
They have a plan right now for how many innings they want him to throw. He's 20 because he only goes four innings a start. He's made five starts.
Right.
So I would say, he threw 88 last year. I would guess they're trying to get him somewhere between 100 and 120.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I would factor in, I think big league innings are probably more stressful than AAA innings.
Sure.
So maybe you cut that to 100. You could get 80 innings out of him. Lord knows you need it. Your bullpen, I think, should get better by the fact that Ben Brown's there now full time, at least until somebody else gets hurt. And I would guess Hayden is going there. That would depend on whether that's only if Wicks comes back, right?
Right.
Otherwise, Hayden's got to stay in the rotation.
Yeah. You think there's a possibility that Wicks...
I guess Hendricks is coming back.
You think there's a possibility that Wicks would go to the bullpen just because they're so light on lefties?
I don't know
that he cares. He's got Mark Leiter.
That's right.
Maybe.
I don't think.
He's going to get Drew Smiley back.
Yeah, going to get Smiley. Forgot about him.
From his hip impingement, whatever that is. One of the things I liked, I looked up, was looking at the guys, their ERA against their FIP. And everybody was like, Shota is obviously overperforming his FIP.
Right.
And Javier Assad is overperforming his FIP. But guess who's really underperforming it? Kyle Hendricks is 12. He's only supposed to be 7.73. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, it's a lot of bad luck. Actually, though, Kyle, it's all bad.
Yeah. Right. When your FIP is 7.5, you're still.
Now, Alex Cohen, the charismatic AAA radio guy for Iowa, with the huge news today, Kyle struck out the side for Iowa today. And in the first inning. I don't know what he did after that, but. Because striking out the side in the Pacific Coast League is, or the, I guess we decided last week they're
international. Yeah. I, like, as blasphemous it is to say, like, if Kyle isn't earning his starter spot, like, you got to do something.
Yeah.
Like, if you're, this is a, at the end of the day, this is a good team.
Yeah. Right.
They're not perfect, but they're a good team. And you're, you know, you're, the starting pitching is really, really good, and that's really high, a high standard now.
Now, maybe I'm projecting what I think he would do as to what he would do, but I have a feeling if when Kyle comes back from this, I get the feeling he's going to tell them. Like if he comes back and he doesn't pitch well, I feel like instead of them having to go to Kyle and be like, we got to have the talk, I feel like Kyle goes to them and they have the talk.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, because fuck, I can't do it.
Yeah.
It would make sense. He's always been a very stand-up guy. I do remember, like, you know, the last few years when, you know, especially last year when it wasn't exactly a certainty that the Cubs were going to be buyers at the deadline, you know, he seemed to be, like, fine with whatever his fate was, you know, if he was going to get traded last year. So I could very much see Kyle Hendricks being proactive in that sense.
Now, if I were Kyle and I had a 12 ERA, you'd have to like take all the shit out of my locker and set it on fire and kick me out.
If I'm
sticking around, I don't care. Screw you. You want me out of here? You got to kick my ass out of here. I just get the feeling, I don't know. We act like we don't know any of these guys.
No,
right.
I think we do, and we don't.
But he seems cool.
Yeah, it seems like he's a guy who will know before they do. You know, like, you know what, I don't have, it's, honestly, last year was kind of a miracle.
It truly was.
That he was that good. I mean, you know, when you go to the doc, when you go to a surgeon, and the surgeon tells you, I'm not going to operate because there's really nothing I can fix. Surgeon, those fuckers will cut anything open. They don't care. That's what they do. They think they can fix everything. And his surgeon was like, I think you're probably better off just, you know, rehab it and see what happens. They didn't operate on him because they didn't know what to do. And then he had a 3.74 ERA for the Cubs last year. And it could be that that was it. You know, he threw his last good pitch last year. I don't know. I certainly hope he didn't. He's not. What is he? He's like 33. He's not even old.
No. But yeah, but
he's not. But at this stage of his career, ain't getting a whole lot better. And the margin for error is less so than. You know,
yeah, like there's always a misnomer that a guy like Kyle, who doesn't throw hard, that should age better because he's getting guys out. But actually, you know, that you have such a fine line between your fastball and your changeup that it doesn't take very much. If those two get too close together, you don't have a changeup anymore. You just have two slow fastballs.
Well, I mean, Andy, come on. I mean, we just saw it with the Padres. Robert Suarez, their closer, he throws 98, 99, 100 on his fastball. He throws his changeup at 94. The hitter should be able to time that up, right?
The only small difference there is that both of those pitches are also taking a hard right or left-hand turn about halfway to the plate.
Right.
And you're having to cheat to get to the 100, and if all of a sudden it's the 94 with a little wrinkle in it, you've completely fucked. Whereas with, you know, Kyle, if you're sitting on 88 and he throws 86, somebody's fishing that out of the bleachers.
I will say this, if you, not to get off topic too much, but if you get a chance, MLB.com has a really cool article on Shota's 92 mile an hour four seamer. Read it. It's really fun. It's good.
Well, see, that was my solution to left field I came up with last night.
play Shota out there?
Just play Shota and left on the days he doesn't pitch. Yes. I think he could do it. We've never seen him bat. Who cares?
If Travis,
I guarantee he could slug 302.
Yeah, hey, if Travis Wood could do it,
yeah, and he'd be a whole lot more fun.
I was going to say, be a hell of a guy out in left field compared to what Ian Happ is. Ian Happ was out there today. Doesn't even do the thing where, like, you know, reacting like with how many outs there are in the inning. Like, at least show some kind of life, man.
What is the over under if Shota played? If they played Shota for a game in left field,
yeah.
What's the over-under on number of pitches? Remember when Bobby Valentine went nuts because Starlin wasn't looking at the batter for like two pitches in a row?
Okay.
What's the over-under on Shota facing the wrong way when pitches are thrown because he's fucking around with the bleacher fans? It's like 40.
Yeah.
He's like more. He'd be more pitches with his back to the batter than actually looking at the hitter.
Like Chad and like. Right. Do you think he'd be talking to like the bleacher bums?
How about this? Would he have? Would they have his translator? In the out there with him so that he could talk back to the fans. Now, you guys were at the game. Well, you were at the game Monday night.
Yeah,
last night. So I don't know if either caught you last night. Taylor was telling you'll be amazed with this. Taylor McGray was telling this long, boring story, and she got interrupted by baseball. They had to cut away from her so they could show some game. And then she literally said, I want to finish telling my story. Like, okay, so they go back to her. And for some reason, she gave a very detailed explanation about how talking to a translator works. Because she's like, so I was talking to Shota. Well, actually, I was talking to, I forget, what's the name of his translator? It's
something Barry, I want to say.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not a...
Anyway, she's like, I would ask a question to him, and then he would ask it to Shota, and then Shota would talk to him. And then I would say, yes, we know how a fucking translator works. There's a baseball game going on, Taylor. Maybe cut to the chase. We don't need the mechanics of how this works. It's like, good Lord. And, of course, none of the stories are ever interesting. Even when you finally weather it all the way to the end, you're like, there's no payoff. It's like, oh, for fuck's sakes.
Edwin Stanberry is the guy's name. Yep. With an E.
Speaking of chats, Edwin would talk to Shota, and Shota would talk to Edwin, and Edwin would talk to Taylor. It's like, we know how, we've seen it. We know how it works.
Ipe is, Ipe pleading guilty all over the place.
He had to plead guilty to, wire fraud and having the worst haircut in California.
Can't believe the guy's going to do 30 years in jail. I don't know if he's going to do 30, but holy cow.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess $60 million.
Just think about how much Shohei could put on his commissary account, though. He'd be living like good a king in prison.
It'll be like that scene in Goodfellas.
Where very thinly slicing.
Yeah, the garlic and the...
man.
Making the meatballs and the sausage.
So the last thing I want to talk about was a former Cub. Wilson Contreras suffered one of the weirdest baseball injuries I've ever seen.
Yes.
And it turns out, you'd be surprised, that the reason that he got hurt is because the Cardinals are fucking morons.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all got exposed to it by, all of a sudden on Twitter, there was this clip of him. You heard that he got hit with a J.D. Martinez hit him with a backswing and broke his arm. And you hear Chip announcing it. Turns out Brad. I thought it was Jim Evans, but it was Brad Thompson was talking about it. They kept calling it a backswing. And the way the clip started, it was all the reaction of Wilson. It's like him holding his arm and jumping up and down and rolling around in the grass. And when they finally showed it, he didn't get hit on the backswing.
It was on
the swing.
The swing, yeah.
I can't imagine that's ever happened where a batter has actually, usually catcher's interference, it's just you just barely tick the tip of the glove.
Right.
This thing was like 18 inches away from that. It literally just smashed him right in the forearm, just below his wrist. And it turns out it was because the Cardinals felt like Wilson wasn't stealing enough low strikes for the pitching staff, so they had him move way up. So he's way too close to home plate, which is why JD could hit him in a freaking arm and broke his forearm, and he's out for at least 6 weeks. And Dr. David Chow, the Twitter doctor to the stars, the former disgraced San Diego Chargers trainer, said that basically the kind of fracture that it is, he'll be lucky to be back in He said eventually put him on this. They will come to the realization they should put him on the 60-day IL because it's going to take at least 4 months, and it's going to be longer than that before Wilson's actually back. All because the Cardinals are like, you're not Yachty enough. Yachty would have got that strike.
So right.
To the plate so that a guy can, so that a 6'4" major leaguer can hit you in mid swing right on your forearm. They are just fucking worst, which is, it's very enjoyable, actually.
Enjoyable, absolutely.
I feel bad for Wilson. I do not feel bad for the Cardinals for anything.
I'd rather not, I would have rather it not happen to Wilson.
I mean, how about this as a method for solving your pitch framing problems? Play someone else there and DH Wilson.
Or how about this? How about why do your pitchers need to have, like, the low strike stolen for them?
Maybe also correct. Did the next hitter on the Mets wound up getting taking one of the ribs or something like that, like Ian Happ had to do last year after?
Some Cardinal fan immediately replied to that with, I would hope the next guy gets one in the ribs.
Right. Like,
for what? Because you're telling your catcher to line up too close to the fucking pitcher?
Mm-hmm.
Just contract the team.
That'd be nice.
Baseball would be just fine without the Cardinals in it.
So they are, they can't score any runs.
Yep.
They can't really pitch. But they
other than Sonny Gray,
Sonny Gray. So they signed three free agent pitchers. Sonny Gray, a great signing, and then Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson. Everybody knew at the time was a waste of time and money, and they both been bad because they're bad.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Goldschmidt,
oh god,
is hitting 195,
yep,
287, 263. His OPS. Didn't we just decide it's Nick Madrigal 10 points more?
All right.
So there you go. Trade Nick Madrigal to the Cardinals to play first base. That's an upgrade.
You just, that would make me so happy. Like if somehow you played one game, one inning, first base for the Cardinals.
Nolan Arenado, do you know what he's slugging for the, Cardinals?
I just had his
360. Up.
Oh, higher
no,
than
he
that.
Hit a home run the other day. Hit a home run the other
390.
Ah, yeah.
Oof.
So so I don't know if you remember this. Last year at the trade deadline, they were in last place. They finished in last place. I got news for them. They're gonna finish in last place again.
There was
some talk at the time. Arenado got off to a slow start. Was playing relatively well by the break. Goldschmidt, who had been the MVP the year before, was not having as good a season, but was still Paul Goldschmidt. He was still a good player, and. It was funny. I remember thinking this was going to happen when the Cubs decided not to trade Cody. I thought there were very few. Like the Cubs got Jamer. I would like to call him Heimer.
Right.
Because of Jesse Jackson. Chicago's Heimertown. And Jamer was like the best bat traded. And he was just Jamer. He's not.
Yeah.
He's fine. And the Cardinals could have cashed in. And traded Goldschmidt to one place and Arenado to another and accelerated this rebuild that they clearly need to do. But they wouldn't do it, and they wouldn't do it for the most cardinal reason ever. They want both of those guys to retire as Cardinals.
Oh, my fucking God.
Because they want to have – and at first I thought this was funny. We're like Katie Wu, Ronnie Wu's daughter, who covers them for The Athletic. And it's another – Cardinal writer were like, no, this is the way this team thinks. Like, they want them to retire as Cardinals. They're going to give them the little red jacket, and they're going to drive them around in the convertible and wave. And it's like, you could trade them, and you could bring them back. And
exactly.
But they wouldn't trade either one of them. And now Goldschmidt has no value. Arenado has a lot less value than he did.
Yeah.
And they've got this, bad team. The other thing that's great about this, the Cardinals' problems right now are they're almost all, they made them all themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, clearly their manager, Ollie Marmol, is completely overmatched. And it's pretty clear, like, Mike Chilt, everybody's, just such a great personality. But he clashed with the front office about a lot of shit, and they ended up firing him after they went to the playoffs. And it's, you can look at it now, and you can kind of see the shit that Mike Chilt was like, no, we're not doing that. Because they fucked up all kinds of stuff. And a lot of it has to do with Wilson, which is really weird. Last year, just before they got to Chicago, they made the announcement, Wilson's not a catcher anymore.
Yeah.
And then the next day he's like, well, he's going to be a catcher, but we're going to give him a couple of weeks off from catching. Well, we teach him, well, we undo all the cup stuff and we teach him how to catch the Cardinal way and all that shit. Now they've got him like breaking his arm by doing whatever.
Yeah.
But they also just a few, like 3 years ago, they supposedly had this glut of outfield talent. They've got all these guys and they don't know what to do with them. And the old Cardinals, we saw it a million times, would have taken those guys and traded them for pitchers and gotten good ones. Well, they ended up like Adolis Garcia left for nothing. They traded Randy Arozarena and they got Matthew Liberatore, who the Rays are like, well, he throws 95 miles an hour, but it's perfectly straight and everybody hits the shit out of it. And that's happened. They should have traded Tyler O'Neill and they didn't do it. They hung on to him. They finally traded the Red Sox for nothing. And now he's like second in the American League in home runs. When they got Arenado, it blocked two guys at third base. They had Nolan Gorman and Jordan Walker, and now they had to find positions for both of them, and neither can play anything else. And Walker, because he's such a terrible outfielder, he gets in his head, and he can't hit in the big leagues, and then he gets sent him to Memphis, and he'll hit 480, and then they'll come back to the big leagues, and he'll hit 222 again. They fucked all this stuff themselves, and their pitching fell apart. Like, everybody kept telling them to turn Jordan Hicks into a starter because he had like, and they wouldn't do it. Trade him to the Blue Jays. He's a giant now, and he's really he's amazing. It's all this stuff that they never would have fucked up before, and they're fucking it all up at the same time. And it's just the greatest thing ever.
It is. It's fun. Here's the crazy thing about what you said. I just looked it up. I can't believe Goldschmidt's been there that long. Arenado was only like, this is his fourth year in St. Louis. Like, what? Who cares if you retire? Like, what?
Oh, it's stupid.
Exactly.
It's not like you won a World Series. Yeah.
It feeds into their, you know, for this, you know, this, well, we're the most successful National League franchise, blah, 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 blah. They're the most insecure organization ever. And a lot of it is projected on the Cubs, right?
Yeah.
Like, their whole personality as a franchise forever was, you know, Chicago's this big city up there, and we went all the World Series, and they never win a World Series. They never did anything. Well, over the last few years, the Cubs are just clearly better than the Cardinals now, and they've lost that, you know. But this is the weird kind of shit that comes out, is this, like, oh, no, we got to save these guys so they can be in the Cardinal Hall of Fame crap.
I feel like it's the kind of shit that the Packers do, but they don't really do even that.
Imagine, if you will, like, if the if the Cubs utility tunnel of fame was a thing when the Ricketts first bought them. This seems like something that like they would have found a way to operate on. Like, they would have made every effort they could to like re-sign Aramis Ramirez after like 2011, just to like have him be a Cub till he retires and go in with the Blue Jacket and Derek Lee and Ryan Dempster and Kerry Wood.
All right, well, I was with you up until the Ryan Dempster thing.
He's in the Hall of Fame though. He's in the freaking Cubs Hall of Fame.
Is he?
Sadly. I thought we went over that because, like, isn't the strength of him being in there on, like,
I don't think he's in.
He's the only guy with, like, 50 wins and 50 saves.
Well, they brag about that all the time. I don't think he's in it because he wouldn't have been around, you know, this is the second iteration of the Hall of Fame. So there's, like, a whole bunch of guys that were already in it who they just, they just made new laminated plaques for them. They're not paying for real ones. It's a, you know, it's like a Denny's menu taped to the wall. but since then, guys of his era have had to be inducted. So I don't think Ryan Dempster is in the Cubs Hall of Fame. At some point, they're going to put him in, and they're going to do the whole. They're going to make him like. They're going to do like the totality of. He was a starter. He was a reliever. He worked for Marquee. He did games. He did, you know.
He worked
like
for Marquee.
Mr. Cub bullshit.
He's so beloved. He's going to be.
Because based on the success with the Cubs alone, they have kind of a weird low bar for that thing anyway. He doesn't meet it. Like, you can't objectively go, yeah, he's good enough to be in there. They'll do this whole thing about he's in as much as an announcer as he is a pitcher and all that shit.
Yeah, they're going to put him in three times, once as a starter, once as a reliever, and once as an announcer.
Well, hopefully he keeps the Harry Carey glasses at home that day.
Now, Ryan Dempster is in the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Him and Fergie, I think, are the only two in it.
Ha! Larry Walker.
Larry Walker, maybe, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
That's right. He does not appear to be in the – he's not in the Utility Tunnel of Fame.
Now, is the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame for players who were born in Canada, like Joey Votto, or like also players who played in Canada, like Steve Rogers. And
I believe you have to be a Canadian. I don't think it's like Expos and Blue Jays get in too.
Okay.
Yeah.
It'd be fun if Joe Carter was in there. It'd be fun if Joe Carter was in the Cubs one.
Yeah, I like Rick Sinclair.
Wow, Dempster's been in the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame since 2019.
Oh, well.
Wow.
Long time.
Yeah. Well, good for him.
Let's see who we've got here in the Canadian Hall of Fame real quick.
I know Tip O'Neill is like...
Russell Martin.
Russell Martin.
Wait, I think you might be right. Russell Martin is Canadian, but I don't think Jesse Barfield is Canadian.
Yeah.
He's in it.
Is Steve Rogers in it? Is Charlie Lee in it?
Well, yeah. You know what? You absolutely are right, Oleg, because I'm looking right now. Like, Roberto Alomar is in it. Felipe Alou is in it.
You're right.
So a lot of great, like, Expos and Blue Jays Pedro are in there, too.
Pedro, famous Canadian Pedro Martinez.
Yeah.
Lloyd Mosey.
How long did Pedro pitch for the Expos? It only had to be a few years, right? Like, maybe it was longer.
Well, that's why he's in. Because of his Expos years.
Right. No, of course. He's in because of his Red Sox career. No, of course. But like...
He didn't pitch there that long. How did he pitch there long enough to be in the Hall of Fame? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
See, on a technicality, even though he's having a worse career than his dad, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is more deserving of being in the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame than his dad was, just by the fact that he was born there.
Oh, because he's actually Canadian. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, because he was born there when Vlad was playing in the Expos.
Yeah.
Jack Bell's in it.
Oh, yeah, of course.
He didn't own a gas station in Canada.
Is Warren Cromartie in it?
Ooh, Jackie Robinson is in it.
Oh, yeah, he was a Montreal Dodger.
Montreal, yep. That's right.
Yeah. And he had to play there a long fucking time. Because he had to wait until they would actually let him play in the big leagues.
Mm-hmm. My company is based in, I think I mentioned this before, my company is based in Toronto.
Hawks in it. Of course he is.
Yeah. And so we've got, we've got a Montreal office. And I was talking to this guy, like one of the sales reps, just, we were chatting. I don't know him very well. But he was talking about how his grandfather talked about seeing Jackie Robinson play.
Montreal. Nice.
Yeah.
Joe Carter is in the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame.
Hell yeah, he is.
See, okay, this pisses me off. Frickin' Tony Kubek is in it just for being a broadcaster of the Blue Jays.
Okay.
And he's
Buck
from
Martinez, isn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say it's Buck Martinez.
Milwaukee.
Or Dan Shulman.
Buck Martinez.
Wait, is Dan Shulman the announcer up there?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's actually a really good. He's really good team. Yeah. Him and Buck is good.
It is.
Yeah.
Buck was not such a good manager. But I don't see Buck. Buck's not in here. We got to have to correct this. This is ridiculous.
Neither is Dan Shulman at this point.
Maybe they don't have announcers. But they just had announcers. Dave Van Horn in there? He was their longtime announcer before they moved to. They were the Nationals, but they were really the Marlins. Some of them, like the front office people, including the announcers. You remember that? So they had to orchestrate this whole thing. Because John Henry didn't want to own, so he owned the Expos, but he wanted to own the Red Sox. So they were going to move the Expos to Washington, and then they were going to set up the deal so Henry would end up with the Red Sox. And then they ended up like the front office people end up going to the Marlins to work for that shit ass down there.
Jeffrey Loria.
Then the players went to Washington to become the Nationals. Yeah,
that's more complicated than the whole.
You get the used car salesman.
Yeah,
he's out
much more complicated than the Arizona Wranglers Chicago Blitz.
I was going to say, isn't there another football one with didn't Bob Irsay trade franchises with someone to get the Colts?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, I don't know that either. I thought he just.
I remember hearing about that.
Now the great story about when and Huey and I talked about it on the thing was.
Yeah.
George Allen, former Bear defensive coordinator and all around prick, was the head coach and maybe the general manager of the Blitz.
Yeah.
And then they did that franchise transfer where they became the Wranglers and the Wranglers moved.
Yep.
And so the Wranglers, when they're packing their stuff up to move to Chicago, they're like, okay, well, they're going to need this and they're going to need this. We'll leave this for them. They get to Chicago and there is nothing. George Allen packed up like he packed up the footballs, but he packed up like they took the whiteboards off the wall. They took like all the pens. They took everything. They walked in literally just empty offices where the Wranglers had left all that shit for them, thinking we're just, you know, we're just moving staff and equipment. We don't need, they're going to need this stuff. And George was like, fuck them. This is ours. And then he wouldn't give them theirs.
Why did they do that in the first place?
It was the owner, Blitz, right?
I don't know. The Blitz were good, right? Like they were good. Like this was 82, maybe 83.
Yeah.
Like the Blitz were good and the Wranglers were terrible. And I'm like, I was a kid. I'm like, why did they do this?
It's because like all Chicagoans do when they want to retire, they move to Arizona.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Let's see. I probably don't want to. There's a whole article here on NBC Sports Chicago. Let's see what the lead is.
An article about just
about the trade, about the franchise trade.
Oh, okay. I could Google it.
But anyway, so if you ever want, there's a great Jeff Perlman wrote a book called Football for a Buck, because that famously when the USFL went out of business, they sued the NFL and they won, but their damages were $1.
Yep.
Thank you, Donald Trump.
But there's a great letter that Perlman publishes in there. So the guy who fucked up the USFL was Donald Trump.
Yep. Yes.
They were a spring league, and they were actually doing pretty good ratings on ABC, and they had basically promised each other, they had a gentleman's agreement, that they would only – each team would have, like, one high-priced player, and they would try to keep salary because, you know, there wasn't a lot of money coming in. And then Trump buys the Generals, and he wants them to move to the fall, and he goes and gets Flutie and Herschel Walker and all those guys, and he fucks everything up. And Carling Bassett's dad, the tennis player Carling Bassett, owned the Tampa Bay Bandits. And he wrote a letter to Trump, and Perlman publishes it in its entirety. And if you read it through the lens of Trump's presidency, it's the same fucking thing. Everything he criticized Trump for and basically just called him an asshole in this letter is all stuff that the country had to go through. But it's a really entertaining book. That's where you find the story about George Allen packing up all the shit and all the other stuff.
Right.
That league was just. The league was insane. So.
I gotta rewatch the 30 for 30 on it. That's a good one.
Well, Tom Thayer played a full season for the Blitz and then played a full season for the Bears when they were still in the spring.
Yeah.
He plays a full season for them, signs with the Bears, and then so he's played like 18 games for the Blitz and then played, I don't know what year that was. It might have been the year that they went to the NFC Championship game, lost to the Niners. 84. So he would have played 18 more. He played 36 football games in like, you know, 9 months or whatever it was.
How was he able to like stay upright?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, working with Joniak has been just as damaging to his to his brain pan as getting hit.
He's got
to
take the same amount of pain pills.
Right.
All right. Well, just what do you expect me to listen to the Cub podcast? We, you know, talk a little Chicago Blitz.
The USFL is fun. That's fun to talk about.
All right. Well, thanks.
How do we even get on the topic of the USFL? It was about George Allen taking everything with him.
It was about the trade. How the hell did the Expos end up in?
Oh, that's right.
Right. That's right. 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 Right.
Holy right. cow! That started with the Canadian Hall of Fame.
And get down a rabbit hole. And
dumpster.
This is why I remember this craps go 3 hours long, because this is right. what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Right on.
Many of us have herpes.
No, I thought it generally sucked. I didn't think it was a specific suck. I thought it was like an all-encompassing type of suck. So, you know, we're going to try and rectify that. But for right now, I'm going to be pretty pissed about it.
It's fitting. It's got to be done with one of the best games of all time. Just unbelievable. I mean, got to congratulate the Dolan family.